welcome to a very spooky AMGO Podcast 7.9. This is a very good intro to a podcast. Spooky. The spooky Halloween. Was that good? That was bad.
That was pretty bad.
We're just gonna roll with it.
Yeah, let's roll.
Just like Michigan's defense did right at the end of that game. How about that?
Yeah, that was a solid segue. That was a nice recovery from.
I don't really know which unit to start with this time. Let's just do the offense.
Game theory, maybe. Yeah, considering the end of that one.
No, let's do the offense.
Okay.
So, you know, the usual rickety business. Rudock was a mixed bag. He was making some throws. I don't think Michigan even attempted to go downfield in this game more than about 20 yards.
No.
Which is maybe accurate. But he had some decent passes in there. He moved the Michigan down the field early. And then there's a lot of frustration that I think settled in before he was ruthlessly booted from this game with an incredibly obvious targeting call that the refs decided that they would just ignore.
Yeah. targeting has gone targeting? Beyond my
Nobody knows what targeting is. Apparently, you can lead with your helmet into somebody else's helmet and have that impact be so forceful that the helmet comes off. But that's cool. But if you're thrown into a dude and you make light, I would say buttery contact.
Yes.
With someone else, then you're ejected from the Michigan State game because Big Ten refs are idiots.
They are. They really are.
But anyway, before he was ejected from this game with a ruthless targeting to his head, he had some very frustrating plays when Michigan was trying to convert third and short. So there's a third and two where he rolls out and the flat route that is the design of the play to get open is open and he doesn't throw it. And then before Michigan failed on that fourth and six, he had another very easy flare pass to Drake Johnson where there's really nobody checking him, and he overthrows that. And instead of having, you know, first and 10 from the 35, Michigan has to try to convert a fourth down, which doesn't go very well. He also threw an interception on a shovel pass. This was kind of early in the game when I was looking at it in grainy Atari 2600 vision.
Yes. Thanks, ESPN.
Yeah, thanks, ESPN. Thanks for putting us right after a Big 12 game featuring a 70-53 final score. Well done, ESPN.
Just assuming that half-hour buffer would totally hold up.
You're televising like Southern Methodist versus Eastern Methodist on ESPN News. The worst.
The worst.
I know they have a regional thing. They could have like cut away from it.
And the game was functionally over.
Yeah.
That was on the television.
But they're still like scoring touchdowns and stuff because it's a Big 12 game. Ugh, the worst. The worst. ESPN.
Yeah.
And they shut down Grantland.
I was about to say, not getting any benefit of the doubt this week, that's for sure. My God.
Can we talk about how dumb John Skipper is? Is that
I'm okay with talking about that because this is the single stupidest way to run an enterprise ever.
We'll have like a separate like Grantland obituary, John Skipper is dumb segment. Because we should still talk about the offense.
We should.
People don't want to hear about it when they want to hear about what our opinion about Derek Green is. What's your opinion about Derek Green?
you know, he tries to get yards.
Okay.
It was a good opinion, wasn't it?
It was a good opinion.
That's why the people listen.
What is your opinion of Drake Johnson?
He seems better at running the football than Derek Green.
Penetrating insights from Aces Football Podcast. Well, so we did see some of the backup types get in. No Isaac in this game. No Higdon in this game.
Yeah.
And it took a while for Drake to actually get into the lineup. And then it's like, oh, that's right.
He's faster and kind of better at seeing the hole than everybody else.
He's fast and he goes in the place where he should go.
Yeah.
I do think he was a little bit fortunate in that there was better blocking for his runs, but I still just don't have any faith in anybody else to actually find them and get through them as quickly.
No, and I mean, he may have benefited from some better blocking than what Smith and Green got, but at the same time, He is the guy who is most equipped to actually utilize good blocking, and he's also the guy who's, when there's bad blocking, sometimes he can just turn a corner on somebody anyway.
Well, and I think part of it is the fact that he has the speed to be a threat on the corner.
Yes.
So a lot of those runs that were coming up the middle, I think that they were more open because, you know, when you've got Green or Smith in the game, you're not really that concerned about him.
I mean, you can set the edge, but you're not too worried about a guy bouncing around you.
And, you know, I haven't been able to look at anything except the Parking God highlight package, which never has anything negative in it. So I haven't seen what happened on some of those Green runs where it looked like there were actually big holes that were eschewed. They were ignored. They were not taken. It might have not been the exact play design, but that's kind of what your eyes are for.
Yes. That's one of the qualities in a running back that you look for. It's the whole vision thing.
Yeah. So it's just, it looks pretty grim here.
It does.
I mean, I do think, everybody wants to see more Drake Johnson going forward. And the fact that it took him so long to get in this game, it's kind of like, and what's going on in practice that makes you think that he's not at least your second best back? And, I mean, maybe this was enough to get him those carries, but at this point it's just like you got to go with that guy.
Yeah, I mean, really kind of regardless of what's happening in practice at this point, he's been the guy who's clearly the best on game day.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe the pass blocking is an issue, but Michigan has options there. You know, they can leave in a tight end, they can leave in a fullback and use him as a receiver, which he's proven to be pretty good at.
Yeah, and if you need to pull him on third down, then pull him on third down, but let's get him the rock earlier.
Yeah. Michigan burned Grant Newsom's redshirt in this game to run him out there in a bunch of 6-0 sets, which I'm not totally pleased by.
Yeah, it's interesting roster management there. I guess they're seeing something out of him that they like, and they do have a situation with the tackles moving forward where they're going to have to get a guy game ready probably earlier than you'd want, but it's still kind of surprising.
They clearly have a package where you have a 6 offensive lineman, and with Logan Tully-Tillman no longer with the team and certain to end up on like LSU or something, Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Go to Ole Miss. But so they obviously wanted to keep running it, and it is an encouraging sign for Newsom that they thought he was the man to do it. And, you know, he looks the part out there.
Yeah, he definitely has the tackle frame and everything that you'd look for.
Oh, yeah, he's out there in 77, and I'm like, who's 70? What, Jake Long's back? And I'm like, okay, that's not Jake Long, but he kind of looks like Jake Long.
Yes.
He has the physical package to be a big-time left tackle.
Might not say great things about where Juwan Bushel-Beede is at these days.
Accurate. I think that's obviously kind of a indicator about who your third tackle is.
Yeah. So I guess that probably speaks to where they're looking in the future at that spot. But
I would assume that both Blake Bars and Juwan Bushel-Beede have been put on notice that they've been passed by a true freshman.
Yes.
And that might not bode well. Of course, Bars is going to be a fifth year next year, so that might be a situation where
a firm handshake.
The firm handshake.
Thank you for your service.
Is issued, but that's more of a postseason talk thing. The wide receivers I thought had a good day. They had to dig out a number of passes that were not quite right. You saw Butt go up for a big one early, where he used his leaping ability and his 6'6" frame, and Rudock finally just kind of like floated it out to him.
Yeah, there were a couple of – I had like a moment of like, hey, maybe Rudock has finally figured out he can just you know, chuck it up to these guys early on. And that didn't really last through the whole game.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see early.
And Chesson had a touchdown where he got put vertical. No, horizontal.
Yes.
He was completely
the
horizontal.
The other one.
Hey, unless you're going to have some better takes about the running backs, I don't want to hear it.
Sorry, it's Sunday morning. We're all kind of piecing it together right now.
I did have maybe a alcoholic beverage or two after that one.
That one, there was a need to take the edge off after that game.
Yeah. But I thought one of the ironic things is that the color commentator was praising Rudock on that Chesson pass. Specifically, he said that was on time. It was not on time.
No.
It was late.
It was very late.
And on replay, you can see the safety make a decision that that's where the ball's going and then freeze for a step. And if he actually trusts his read there, he's breaking on that ball. maybe breaking it up, maybe worse.
Yeah, because even a beat late, he is demolishing Chesson on that catch.
So late. And I thought, you know, they helped some of Ruddock's passes that were off become complete. So.
Yeah, Darbo's got impressive hands. I mean, I think we knew that already, but he's a guy who tends to catch just about everything that's in his area.
Yeah, and since they didn't try to go downfield, there wasn't really much of a – I mean, the only time they did is when they put Peppers on a linebacker and just shot him downfield on a wheel route, which was a real good idea, and then that pass was like 20 yards short probably.
Yeah.
And get a pass interference instead of – which was a totally legit pass interference.
It was.
He gets run over, but if that – ball is anywhere near accurate and Peppers doesn't get tackled by that linebacker, he's probably open by 5 yards because he's Jabril Peppers. And instead, you get your 15 yards, which I guess is nice. But
yeah, I have enjoyed the way they've deployed him on offense.
Yeah, well, so I think one of the interesting things about him is that we see him be so confident and secure when he's running up to catch punts that you do wonder what he's going to be like when Michigan tries to throw it downfield to him. Because, I mean, that they did that for the first time on that one play, and it would have been nice to see
him go up for one.
Yeah, because I
assume he's a legitimate receiver.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, just based on what he did in high school, and there's a lot of what he did in high school that is encouraging in that regard. And
well, he catches every punt.
Yes, and the way he goes up for the ball, he did have the drop of what would have been a pick six earlier this season. But
come on. You mean earlier this season? Right?
Yeah. Okay. Not about last.
So there, I mean, there was one in this game, but we'll talk about Peppers on defense in the other segment. But I mean, he was a Wildcat quarterback a couple times in this game. Once he got a touchdown because he made contact with the guy at the two, and basically Devion Smithed his way into the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not unconvinced that he's not the best running back on the team.
I don't think you're going to get much argument from anybody on that. But we saw him have. Maybe a dozen and a half.
Yeah, I mean, he'd passed 80 snaps, but then threw up a graphic in the fourth quarter that said he'd played 80 snaps.
Yeah.
And Minnesota doesn't run that many offensive plays. So he got out there a lot.
He did. And it's obviously a thing where, I mean, Michigan got a 25 or something yard gain on a reverse that was not a double reverse for Pant's sake. because everybody was so focused on Peppers because he took an end around for 9 yards earlier.
Yeah.
Just one of those things where he's a threat and you kind of got to balance how much you can give him. But I expect to see this every game going forward.
Yeah, and balancing out the threat of Peppers with the speed of Chesson coming back the other way is something that's really nice to have for them as a counter. And that obviously worked quite well last night.
It did, and then we should talk Wilton Speight because Wilton Speight came in, and my mentions filled up with people comparing it to the 2012 Nebraska game, which I also was thinking.
Yeah, it certainly was on the mind.
A little bit less of a drop off there because Ruddock is not Denard, but
also Speight is not Bellamy.
And that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah,
Speight had a lot of trouble finding guys early. He had opportunities to hit open receivers that he's thrown into the fire for the first time. He doesn't want to turn the ball over, and he hesitated and was lost.
Yes.
So after, 2-3 drives of that, everybody's like, Peppers, full-time QB, let's just do it. And then Michigan gets a short field thanks to their defense and a shaky punt possibly induced by the presence of Peppers back there. And he moves the offense. He scores a touchdown. You know, the touchdown was a good design by Michigan. They ran double posts, and the Minnesota defense was in zone. So that safety in the center of the field was taken away by the other post.
Yeah, they're in no man's land.
Yeah, and Speight reads it, makes the throw, gets a touchdown. And then on the two-point conversion, he surges forward in the pocket. He's been looking left the whole play. He comes back to his right, and he throws it where only his guy can get it. Michigan converts. And that allows them to win the game because on the other side of the ball, some bad things happened.
Yeah, that ended up being quite huge in the outcome.
So, and people are talking about wanting to see more of him, and I can't agree with that. I don't think we saw very much from him.
We should probably not overreact to 3 for 6 for 29 yards.
Yeah.
But
and like several plays on which he should have thrown the ball but didn't throw the ball. Like Rudock is obviously not great, but after seeing these two guys compete against the same team, I don't think that they're particularly close.
No. And again, we've had indications all season that that's the case from just the way that the quarterbacks right. have been handled.
Yes.
I think mostly with this, if you're going to take anything out of this, it's that Shane Morris is really far away.
Yeah.
Obviously, they talk about trying to save the red shirt.
To be frank, why is he redshirting?
Yeah. I mean.
To be frank, he's redshirting because he wants to graduate after this year.
Yeah.
And then he'll have 2 to play 2 somewhere else. That's my assumption at this point.
Yeah, because they're clearly not trying to get him on the field. And, you know, if you were talking about having him be your real number 2 quarterback, but you'd pull off the redshirt in an emergency, that game counted as an emergency situation.
Yeah,
and they went with Spate.
Because he's the number 2 quarterback.
Yes.
The end.
Yeah.
I said that on Twitter, and then people on Twitter were like, "You don't know that." And I'm like, come on.
Like, inference is this.
No,
is
it's
this
not thing. An inference. I was like, I know, like, I talk to people.
Well, there's also that.
I talk to people.
But also, just in this case, like, inference, like, common sense. Like, yeah. It's not hard.
It is not hard. But a lot of things that are not hard
become amazingly hard on the internet.
Also, apparently in football games, but that's another segment.
Yes.
All right, let's take a little break. Come back, talk about it. Like infrared, yeah. We the best, mostly. Sometimes the freshest rhymers. We the tightest, kind of. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. We the best, mostly. Sometimes the freshest rhymers. We the tightest, kind of. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my qualifiers. Respect my, respect mine. So fundamentally, this was just super unlucky, I think.
Yeah, some of those Mitch Leidner up the seam back shoulder passes that were just like, you are not Joe Montana, why are you doing
for
that?
For one, not even Joe Montana would even try that.
No, it was ridiculous.
So that corner route, like the color, I gave the color guy a little bit of stick, but he was dead on this one where he's like, you know, Jeremy Clark can't cover that any better. He actually gets his head around.
Yeah.
So if the ball is anywhere accurately thrown, he's probably catching it in the same way that he intercepted that pass against Maryland.
Yeah, where he just turned and it was in his chest, basically.
Yeah. And so he turns around and the ball is far enough behind him that he can't get his outreached hand.
This is a 6'4" Jeremy Clark.
Yeah. And the guy, the receiver to his credit, makes an adjustment and catches the ball. But that is not in the Mitch Leidner oove.
No.
that is not something that, like, Mitch Leidner was trying to do.
This is not like Aaron Rodgers making a slight adjustment with Randall right. Cobb up the middle of the field. This was not that. This was like, oh, that was kind of crappy and somehow worked.
If Tom Brady makes that throw, I'm like, I don't really know if he was trying to do that or if he just got lucky. If Mitch Leidner makes that throw, I'm like, no way.
There's no doubt in
there's
your mind.
There's no way.
That is crap. That is absolute garbage.
There's no way. And then Leidner, of course, got lucky again when DeMonte Thomas had an interception go through both of his hands.
Yes.
For a deflection on an arm punt that he definitely should not have thrown, and Thomas should have intercepted and taken back a long distance. And then while we were still watching it in Atari Vision, Michigan has 3 guys around a ball, and none of them managed to find it because 2 Minnesota receivers are running in the same area. That's the one where, you know, you want Michigan to play better, but it is also still a very stupid idea.
Yes.
It is not a good thing.
There were several plays on which you just kind of threw up your hands and went, all right.
Yeah, and the first half, you know, Michigan probably should have been ahead 21-3 by the end of that half, but they get the spooky action from at a distance from Mitch Leidner, and now it's a football game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, part of the thing, some of the things that happen in this game, I think, are holes that are showing up in the defense. So, Desmond Morgan got beat on that wheel route and that was legit. And yes. It's like, well, yeah,
Desmond. That's the first time we've seen that.
Yeah, Desmond Morgan, not the fastest guy in space, and they found a way to do something about that. You saw a couple of big runs by Rodney Smith, I believe.
Yes.
As Michigan did a pretty good job overall against the Gopher ground game, but got cracked a couple times. And then Mitch Leidner had a couple of zone reads, one of which I'm pretty sure was on Ross. The other one was definitely on Delano Hill.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a weakness that Michigan might have because they don't really practice that much against the zone read. But the Delano Hill one was especially grating because it was third down. And if he's just playing the quarterback, Michigan forces a field goal, and then it's a touchdown for basically free.
Yeah, and with Hill, too, you get the concern because he busted on the big fullback play against Michigan State.
Yeah.
And, you know, that
and
you don't want your safeties to bust things that often. And,
yeah.
You know, he hasn't really been picked on, but that might be something to look at going forward as a guy who's going to get targeted in space.
Yeah, so the Michigan State play is kind of like, all right, well,
it was a great play design.
We can forgive that.
Yeah.
And then this week, having that bust is kind of like, I'm getting a little worried about what safety looks like next year when you don't have Jared Wilson and your starters are almost certainly Thomas and
Hill.
And Hill. Yeah. So, I mean, we haven't.
It would have been decent, but I mean,
there
are a couple little red flags that have
and
popped up.
Like early in the Atari 2600 period, Thomas did get completely turned around on a. I guess it was a post to an out, and that was their first big conversion. And that was, you know, we haven't seen a guy necessarily that open very much this year.
Yeah.
And that's another sign for concern at safety, but Michigan doesn't really have any other options there. So that's another thanks, Brady, kind of moment. What are you going to do? And then we saw a lot of Ross at the Buck.
Which did not really make any sense.
No.
Because he's not big enough to play that, really.
And we saw Jenkins Stone play in this game. So I don't know if he had some sort of injury. Even if he does have an injury, you'd kind of think that against the Minnesota that your desire there would be to get bigger.
Yeah, you go beef over anything else
yeah,
there.
Like
I mean,
play.
They played Taco Charlton a little bit at the – I mean, a tiny bit.
A tiny bit.
You know, you'd figure that would be better than
– And Ross has never really played that position. So, you know, when he gets trapped inside and there's a cutback run, I'm not really surprised because he's a 230-pound guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of undersized for inside linebacker. Yeah,
who's pretty easy to move. So that didn't really make any sense
to
me.
I didn't get it either.
And well, I mean, I guess we'll probably get some answers about it at the Monday press conference because we'll have Adam ask.
Yes.
What was going on there? But hopefully that's something where RJS was dinged up and they can get back with him because I thought that he's been playing pretty well.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah. I think it's more worrisome about what it says about maybe Lawrence Marshall because that should probably be your next option there. And he's just disappeared.
Yeah. All that preseason hype, not so much. So what are you going to do? But you Michigan know. Didn't really get to the quarterback very much in this game. And part of that was that Minnesota was spending the entire day in max protection.
Yes.
So what are you going to do there? I guess you try to double up and I don't know. Make the quarterback throw into coverage, and then it just works anyway because whatever. So, I mean, if you take away the giant fluke plays in this game, Leidner averages like 4 yards an attempt or something.
So, yeah.
And he ends the game like, you know, 13 of 33. So it's,
and it looks like a Mitch Leidner stat line.
It does, but instead didn't happen.
Occasional moments of Joe Montana-dom.
No, because nobody, he was not planning it. Just
accidental.
Brady Hoke, 2011, horseshoe up your butt kind of stuff. Especially because Jabril Peppers, who people are still throwing screens at for some reason, almost had a pick six on an absolutely terrific play. Where
yeah.
He was just like, well, I'm going to teleport around these guys and just run. And then the only reason that wasn't a pick six is the receiver managed to play defensive back a little bit.
On a screen.
A screen.
Jabril Peppers is just insane.
And Peppers had a impressive pass breakup where he came over the top of a 6'4 dude.
Yeah.
Which I've never.
Like way over the top.
Which I've never seen before.
Yeah.
It's like I didn't know that was a possibility.
He does some things that you don't normally see on a football field.
Yeah. I think this is a game where he kind of came into his own as the star on the team.
Yeah.
And. You know, we didn't see Jordan Lewis get targeted very much at all, which I think was a smart thing by
Still managed to get a pass breakup because he's Jordan Lewis.
That was in the end zone after Leidner had run around and decided to toss it, and that was the one time it didn't work out because I had so much nervousness about this game, and I was so angry because so much of it was so dumb. Like,
was this nervousness heading into the game? Because I wasn't nervous about this game at all.
But at like halftime,
the third quarter,
halftime, I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Because especially that touchdown that got hit on Clark, like that's probably either an interception or with an immediate tackle, or if Michigan gets lucky, a pick six. And a little bit of a swing there instead of
bit of a swing.
Ah, yeah, woof. But you know, I don't think that many of the things here are particularly sustainable if you're trying to move the ball on this defense. But you know, those second corners, I think we've seen a chink or two. So last week, Clark is in cover three and lets a guy get over the top of him.
Yeah, just a really bad bust.
Yeah. And in this game, you know, they got down to the one because Channing Stribling bit on a slant and got beat big time. And at the situation where, you know, they're already in field goal range, giving up a first down is not really a big deal.
Getting hit over the top, on the other hand.
Yeah, and almost giving up a game-losing touchdown is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like second corner's, you know, not as strong as the rest of the secondary. The buck spot is a little shaky with Ojemudia out.
And the non-Wilson safety we're having some issues with.
And there's that. And, I mean, I guess Desmond Morgan's ability to cover wheel routes is a weak spot. But, you know, as weak spots go, that's not so bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, they obviously gave up yards in this game in a way that they had not, 461 seeded.
Against Minnesota, not something you expect.
I mean, literally like 130 of those were complete flukes.
Yeah, I just wouldn't have expected this defense to even give up the 300 or so on the non-fluke plays. But,
well, you know, they got a little bit coming back to earth here, I think. But what are you going to do?
Yep. Still the number one defense on S&P Plus this week. It is tough to complain too much.
Yeah, and they'll do much better going forward here, just because that kind of confluence of spooky.
And we should probably bring up that, you know, Ryan Glasgow and Mo Hurst are still pretty good. Made a pretty big difference towards the end of that game.
They are. So, you know, the last play where Michigan feels that it's going to be a sneak and Minnesota runs the sneak, they still got to win that. And Glasgow,
they won the heck out of that.
And Hurst, particularly, along with Morgan and other guys, were dominant.
Yeah. I mean, Leidner, like, impacted the center because he just got blown back. And there was that. And there was also on the very previous play, Hurst just gets off the ball in an instant and is pressuring Leidner and forcing him to throw this back-footed duck to nowhere.
Well, they were trying for the throwback, and that was also very well covered. So Michigan had that dead to rights, despite all the frippery.
Yeah, and, but Hurst just made sure there was no chance of that play working out.
I just don't think it should have ever come to that, because, you know, that fourth down completion they had, that was not a catch. I mean, they rule it a catch, but, you know, I feel like you should change the rule so that if the ball hits the ground, it's not a catch, and if it doesn't hit the ground, it is.
That would be far too simple.
This whole, like, I mean, the guy is still trying to control the ball, right? Because he's falling over. He hasn't actually brought it back into his body. Like, he's got both hands on it, and it's secure, but he hasn't made a football move with it. And it very obviously on the ground. And it's like, I don't think that's a catch. Like, I didn't think the Sugar Bowl thing was a catch. I didn't think that the Junior Hemingway thing against Iowa in 2011 was a catch. Just if the ball touches the ground, it's not a catch. I think that should be the rule.
And instead we have a whole confusing.
Right. You're like, what's a catch? Well, what's targeting? I don't know. I do not know. What is targeting, Ace?
I mean, as far as I know, it's when you get pushed into somebody and your helmet's graze.
What is targeting? It is an arbitrary distinction that refs use to punish those who have angered the gods. That's targeting. All right. We'll take one more break. We'll come back. We'll talk special teams and maybe a little bit Cape Fear.
Maybe a bit.
So the game theory tip from this game is don't do that.
Stop shifting.
Don't do that. Don't. Why are you doing
bad
that?
Bad idea.
Stupid person.
But thank you. I mean, much appreciated for all of that.
Stupid person. Especially because they were coming out of a replay.
Yeah, and then they have to know. And the replay was to see whether or not the runner was tackled in bounds. Short of the goal line. But, you know, the whole thing is that they were tackled short of the goal line in bounds. So the clock runs after that.
Do you think they just literally didn't know that they were going to wind the clock?
That's the only reason I could see for them doing what they did.
Because you have 19 seconds. And with 19 seconds and a timeout.
You can run four plays.
You can run four plays.
They ran two.
The first one is probably has to be a fade.
Yeah. Or a very quick underneath. I mean, something quick.
I think it has to be a fade.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're Minnesota, you have a 6'5 guy, and you have a 6'10 tight end.
A 6'10 tight end.
A 6'10 tight end.
It seems like he'd be a red zone threat.
So you throw the fade, and then you're at like 15 seconds. And now you can do anything.
Yeah, and they've still got a timeout here.
They still got a timeout. They can run a sneak and call a timeout. And then they can run another sneak if they want. And that's dodgy, but you might have to throw, and then it's fourth down, and then you have a decision to make.
And at this point in the explanation, Minnesota is motioning their fullback out into the flat.
Like they shifted and then they shifted again.
And then there was like a third minor adjustment that one guy made. It was just a terrible, terrible idea.
It was. It was a terrible, terrible idea. But I feel we deserved that cosmically.
I think so. There was a thread that popped up on the message board titled Karma, and so much of me wanted to delete it because that's such a dumb we're not a member of the Bielema family. That word should not be used really because of that. But at the same time was like, you know what? Yeah, it felt like we deserved that.
Well, and they still had to defend two plays.
Yes, including a sneak from the half yard line, which is not an easy thing.
So they did earn the win more than I don't know, say a team that
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah. Drop a ball.
Why bringing up the past?
Good point. But I'm just saying. Anyway, the other part of game theory here is okay. It's been a disaster. You now have second and goal from the half yard line with 2 seconds left. And Minnesota is going for the win. I think that's correct. I don't think the spate thing really moves the needle, because if you're looking at how you, Minnesota, have moved the ball in this game, it's mostly like lucky.
Yes.
And let's just play it out. Let's say you get the ball second in overtime. First thing that happens is that you hold Michigan to a field goal. So that's a good thing that's happened. The second thing that happens is that you get down to the half foot line, and let's say it's fourth and goal from the half foot line. Are you happier now than when you started overtime? Yes. Yes, you are. And so the move there is probably to go try to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, we also, you know, Minnesota settled for field goals of 23, 30, and 32 yards in this game. Scoring on Michigan from inside of 25 is tough.
Right.
So at that point, you're on the half yard line. You got a decent rushing offense. I would not necessarily have gone behind the true freshman center going up against Michigan's pair of nose tackles who are, you know, possibly All-American level if they played more snaps.
I don't know. Do you really want to, like, pull the ball off the line of scrimmage and then see what happens with Maurice Hurst?
It's tough because I think no matter what, they're probably blowing up an inside run there. But
and Leidner is 240. I mean,
like, yeah, I mean, if it wasn't so obviously against their identity that it would probably be pretty telegraphed, I wouldn't be against them.
You can't throw there.
No, I'm not saying to throw, but to line Leidner up in the shotgun and let him kind of rhinoceros it forward, Debo style.
Yeah.
Where you're not necessarily giving the defense – you're giving him a chance to see where the push is going to come
I just – I can't question a quarterback sneak from the half yard line.
It's tough. I mean, you really do expect to just get that push.
Yeah.
But they really did not get that push.
they did not get that push. The thing is that was amazing is that, like, it wasn't close. Like,
no, there wasn't a measurement.
No.
There wasn't any doubt.
No. Like, they reviewed it, but it was like, why are we reviewing
it? Because we were watching an entire pile just stop dead at the half yard line.
Yeah. But
which was beautiful, by the way.
Fundamentally, the game theory takeaway from this is, no, don't do that. Don't even – what are you doing?
Why are you shifting?
Have a Madden person on the sideline. Madden 14-year-old will save your ass. We also talk about special teams here. Michigan, again, really won special teams. They had a 45-yard kickoff return and a 41-yard punt return from Dribble Peppers. That probably should have been a touchdown, except I think he was moving too fast to realize that the punter was going to hit him. But the Peppers punt return was beautiful because there are a lot of punt returners that don't even field that ball.
Yeah.
And Peppers comes up, catches it on the run, and is by the first wave of Minnesota defenders before they even know what's happened.
Before anyone's really figured out what's happened, yeah. Except for Jabril Peppers.
And like that's we've been talking about his ability to fair catch balls all year because it's saving Michigan 10, 15 yards at a pop. This time it saved Michigan 50 yards.
Yeah, and those plays, I mean, you see it usually more often when a team's punting from deep in their own end and they've kind of got to go max protect and get some short punts out of that. But the ability to field those punts on the run, that's how you can get those quick 20, 30, 40 yard or just return it to the house type situations because having a guy flying at you, catching the ball, going full speed, I mean, good luck trying to stop that.
Yeah, and Michigan had one punt that they saw muffed. They were defending this punt, and the opposing team muffed it, and Michigan got hit with a kick catch interference call. It was a good call.
It was. He was within a yard.
You don't have to actually touch the player, but if your presence affects them, then they will throw the flag. Kind of one of those things where, you know, I don't think it should be a 15-yard penalty. Like, I think it should be 5.
Yeah, I mean, maybe 15 if you lay the guy out or something.
Yeah, if it's a personal foul for unnecessary roughness, that's one thing. But, you know, what is the normal upside of a punt where someone is so close where you can be kick catch interfered with? It's not 15 yards. It's usually about 0 because there's a fair catch.
Yes.
So
it's please don't fumble.
Yeah. And I don't think they throw that flag unless
the ball comes out.
We've seen people almost kick catch interfere, and then it's just a fair catch, so the refs let it go. That's why I think the penalty should be 5 yards. That's what it should be. But anyway, I don't really blame DeMonte Thomas for that because Minnesota had two returners back within like 3 yards of each other, and one of them calls fair catch, and the other guy catches the ball. he also calls fair catch, so Thomas is assuming that the guy who calls fair catch is going to, and then all of a sudden the other guy kind of runs up and
Yeah, Thomas actually did a pretty good job of matrixing his way away from contact on that play, but it was just a fraction of a second too late to avoid the flag.
Still a correct call, yeah, and just a bad rule for that to be such a big penalty, because mostly what it's used to is to prevent turnovers because someone unfairly interfered with your opportunity to catch a kick. Yeah. Michigan had a pretty big advantage, I think, in the punt game overall, so. You have 44 yards a kick from Blake O'Neal and no return yards at all versus 38 yards a kick from Minnesota's kicker, who was the first team All-Big Ten kicker last year, by the way.
Yes.
And, of course, you get the Peppers punt return. And then Michigan should have had Minnesota pinned at the 1, but DeMonte Thomas, who had a rough game with his hands.
Could not down it.
Could not catch the ball after it hit, so... a little frustrating. You see why Michigan goes for like the fair catch type thing, because once the ball hits, it could go many places. So overall, another very, very solid game from Blake O'Neal, which I think helps mitigate the big gap in yards here because Michigan had less yards to gain, and they were gaining probably a first down, maybe even 15 yards overall every time there was an exchange of punts.
Yeah, definitely another game where Michigan wins the hidden yardage battle, and that helps offset some of the offensive deficiencies there.
Yeah, I was getting mad at Minnesota's kicker for putting it in the end zone when they had a kickoff. I was like, Because I don't know. The first one that Peppers got, and at some point I was just like, maybe you should just return it. Like, I don't care if he's 8 yards deep in the end zone. Just especially when Michigan and,
like,
had
the potential
spade
cost
out there.
Of, like, if you lose 10 yards, you probably weren't going to get those 10 yards anyways. So yeah. just go for it.
Maybe you should just go.
You know,
it.
As a general rule, if the ball is in Jabril Peppers' hands, I'm not going to be mad if he tries to do something with it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a lot of touchbacks the rest of the year.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
It's going to be a lot of trying to avoid kicking it to that guy.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
Luckily, we can put him in on offense and still have a little bit of fun that way.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to, like, fix football by removing kickoff returns. And, like, that's not at all effective.
No.
The targeting rule, I think, is something that they need to work on, but is something that needs to stay in football. But let's move the kickoffs back to the 30, please. Like, just touchback city.
Yeah, because, I mean, we are here to play football after all.
We are. And changing one play out of every 20 is not particularly good.
Nah.
Game theory, don't do that.
Definitely don't do that. Why are you still shifting?
Why are you doing that? They're still shifting.
It almost felt like they weren't even going to get the snap off at some point. Yeah. They were just going to keep shifting
for
eternity.
I was hoping that, like, by the time the ball hit the ground, time would have run out. That would have been hilarious. But it didn't.
And it allowed Michigan to have a pretty epic goal line stand. So that part was nice. It felt more, like you earned that with the whole stuffing the sneak instead of just like, well, Minnesota is stupid and did that thing. Although that still played into it, obviously.
Yeah. There's some Michigan State ankle biters that I've muted, but they show up in my mentions when people reply to them, which stop doing that, Brian Mack. and they're like trying to like be like, you guys didn't think Michigan State's win last week was valid, and you think this one's valid. I'm like, those are the same, buddy.
Yeah. I also had a couple Buckeye trolls pop up talking about offsides on that last snap because there's a down-the-line picture of it where, first of all, Minnesota center boosts the ball up by about a third of a yard, and that covers it. But, Michigan is over the football by, like 3 inches and, like a helmet, crown of the helmet, and people are calling for neutral zone infraction, and those people can go to hell.
They can. They can go to Twitter hell where I don't see where they're talking about ever unless Brymack responds to them, which don't do that, Brymack. let's talk about how dumb John Skipper is.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. We're going to do that. Lumberjack, he landed on his back. He's betting on the netting when the rigging went slack. Was a moonless night. Stars a lemming light. She's leering in the mirror when the road it broke right. This you never really know. When the whistle's gonna blow, you never really know. Easy come and easy go. So first of all, Michigan has this game moved from 8 o'clock to 7 o'clock when they're... game preceding them is Oklahoma State versus Texas Tech.
Which, you hear those two teams and it's like, okay, this final score is going to combine to be in the 120s, probably.
The Ishtar of football games is obvious, and you're so packed with stuff that you have to put it on ESPN3, and everybody's like, oh God, what's my ESPN3 login again? And
let me scramble to find my laptop real quick while this football game is going on.
And they're not even taking commercial breaks. Like, Michigan stops Minnesota on their first drive. There's a punt. Dude, take a commercial break. Like, let's just chill out.
Let's move past the whole grainy, pixelated experience that we're getting here.
Let's think about what would be good for us and take one of our commercial breaks now. And they just don't do it. So Michigan has half of the first quarter available only on the internet, and – as soon as they come back, it's a commercial break. And I'm like, the worst. So John Skipper is dumb.
The worst.
John Skipper has also vastly overpaid for basically everything that's on ESPN. People think that he overbid on Monday Night Football by $400 million a
year. That is a lot of money.
And I'm like, how many Grantlands can you have for $400 million? How many Grantlands can you have for one Stephen A. Smith?
Just one.
So
all it takes is one.
People talking about how Grantland didn't succeed and didn't make money are missing the point entirely here. So this is just John Skipper being a bitch to Bill Simmons.
Yes.
End of story. The amount of money that Grantland loses, if it actually loses, you know, Simmons said it was close to break even. The amount of money that, you know, a bunch of writers on the internet could lose for ESPN is essentially nothing.
And in terms of the draw of Grantland, it's not about making money. It's about drawing people to your whole site, drawing people in to see you as the leading.
Yeah, it's a prestige.
They're supposed to be the worldwide leader in sports, so there's supposed to be intelligent sports discussions somewhere on there, and that was it.
Yeah.
And Grantland, I mean, for me, first thing I did when I opened my laptop every day was to open up the top four or five articles that I wanted to read on Grantland. Like, it really had reached that level.
Yeah.
Across multiple sports and with pop culture stuff, too. I mean, when I read about television stuff, it was usually there.
The amazing thing is that Grantland hired all the people I would have hired if I was working at Grantland.
Yeah.
Like, in college football, they have Matt Hinton
and Holly Anderson.
And they have Chris Brown, who does both college and NFL stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they hire Mark Titus for college basketball.
They've got Zach Lowe on NBA, and I've got friends texting me, like, where are my Zach Lowe articles? I'm dying.
Yeah, they have that Kirk Goldsberry guy who does all the shot charts, which are innovative and very cool.
Yes.
Like, pretty much everybody who was supposed to be a smart technical person was a really smart technical person, and then the people who I know, oh, Brian Phillips, Jesus Christ.
I know. I just thought about that.
I read
that man a platform immediately.
I first found out about him when he had a Slate article, and it was a Slate article about this fake Moldovan soccer player that the internet had kind of hoaxed into existence. So they talked about him on message boards a bunch, and they eventually got people reporting about the transfer activities of this Moldovan kid who simply did not exist. And you know, I'm reading a Slate article, so I'm expecting it to be a Slate article, and I'm like, this is incredible. And I was like, who is this person? And I Googled and I found his site Run of Play.
Yeah.
Which he had like a year long series about him taking a third division Italian team to the Champions League in Football Manager, which was also like something that I was doing. Except I took it was a Turkish team. Long story short, but he made this incredibly engaging, and then they went out and hired him, and I was like, so he did the Iditarod, and with an incredible thing, he went to do sumo.
Yes.
You know, incredible results, and just the idea that you would have this guy, and then you would be like, well, what would you like to do? And have that kind of result, and then look at that and be like, nah, let's keep putting money into the undefeated. And Stephen A. Smith and
whose contract, by the way, his new contract is worth greater than $3 million a year. Stephen A. Smith.
I tell you what, ESPN, I will threaten Kevin Durant for $100,000.
Yes. Yeah. I will undercut that. I will do it for even less.
I don't know. Kevin Durant, scary dude. Not scary. Not at all scary.
He's pretty tall.
He's tall, yes, but that need more than that to be scary. George Mirzian is tall. Did he scare you? No.
No.
He's French.
Yeah, I thought he was like Romanian or something.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. They all got killed in World War II anyway, all the tall people. Anyway, it's probably not true, but I haven't watched an NBA game in a while, so it's possible. Anyway, so the decision to shutter Grantland is really just part of an interpersonal pissing match that John Skipper is having with Bill Simmons. And
this one got a lot of people caught in the middle of that.
Yeah. And like Bill Simmons has always been a guy with a temper and a guy who's not able to be controlled. And I kind of understand why they split ways. But, you know, John Skipper is not an artiste. He doesn't have an artistic temperament. He's not writing stuff. He doesn't really have anything to show for – he's just a middle manager. He's an executive. And the trait that you need to have as an executive is you need to think about what's best for your business, and overpaying by billions of dollars for sports rights and shuttering the prestige thing that is actually really good that you do while keeping First Take on the air and the Jameel Hill Yelly show. God, that's so bad. is just like, you're just in charge of things because you're in charge of things.
Yeah, I mean, what's the best thing that ESPN produces now that is original?
Probably Outside the Lines.
I mean, and that's something that they've shoved into a not great time slot, and they don't give much. I mean, when they're breaking a huge story, they'll put it on the front page. Yeah. And other than that, Outside the Lines is not prominently featured on ESPN at all.
And that's one of those things where they're obviously spending money on it, but they feel they need to spend money on it so that they have some sort of respectability.
Because they report on sports,
yeah.
so they should do that.
And Grantland kind of falls in the same area, but because of one man's animosity for another dude, they just decided to blow it up, which makes no sense.
Yeah, here's hoping Simmons can get a whole bunch of that band back together or something, but...
Yeah, we'll see. I mean,
because the part of the disappointment was that the interplay between all those writers there was also tremendous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about HBO is HBO has long understood that's where they're positioned.
So, yes, they are the prestige
network. So that's something where they might see an opportunity. And HBO does do stuff with sports, boxing mostly. But one of those things where does HBO have a web presence? No. Could they get one? Yes.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hopefully everybody gets the band back together. Would like to see Holly at that Wazoo game. Too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, John Skipper is dumb. And, you know, occasionally people ask me, they email me about, and there's a board thread about how, like, oh, what happens when you get called up to the big leagues? Dude.
No thanks.
No way. Not in a million fucking years.
Yeah, that's... Why? Why would you put yourself out there like that?
Well, I mean, people come at me and they're like, you know, do you want to sell the site? You know, sometimes they're really excited about how active our message board is. And I don't, you know, no offense to the message board people, but if that's your main takeaway from Angle Blog, we're not a good fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been offers made. They have not been financially compelling. And then when you have the idea that, you know, someday that boss who you're like, okay, this guy is a good guy. I can have him. He's not going to be there. And when I was at Fan House, it was really interesting because they had two guys who were the editors in chief who were both real good dudes. And they both, one of them left because he was a matrim and he had bigger things to go do. And then the second guy was okay. I forget his name. But then the third guy, his name was Randy Kim. And I remember my phone call with Randy Kim, and Randy Kim was just this buzzword spewing robot. And I was like, all right, well, this is over. And if that happened to like my main gig, that would be very, very bad.
Yeah, that would be somewhat devastating.
Since it happened to Fan House, I was like, well, I guess I should not expect to have that income, which was fine because Fan House bridged me to having it. This is my job.
Yeah.
Which was nice. But if you think that I'm going to give myself a boss when I don't have to do that, don't worry about it. It's going to be cool.
This is why when people ask me, like, where would you think about going next? It's like, what? What? Like, pardon me? Like, why would I want to do that? I'm in the situation where I have the boss who's hopefully not going anywhere. And, well, and I've been reassured of that.
Yeah,
many
well,
times. And looking around and seeing what writers my age and what jobs they tend to have and how long they tend to stick in those jobs and whether or not they even like those jobs in the first place. It's tough to get all of those things to come together. Like really, really tough. And so people are like, where would you go next? I'm like, no, let's not even start talking about that.
Yeah. When we've lost people, we've always lost people who were part-time and they got a full-time opportunity. And you're like the first, like, employee.
Yeah, when I try to explain like what I do to people where it's like I get to be this blogger, but it is actually a real full-time job. And like seriously, like I make a living.
So the whole way that Grantland went down is exactly why none of us have any interest in ever working for anyone. And we did just call John Skipper dumb about 70 times.
Yeah, so we're not working for him.
So ESPN's off the table, everybody. All right, let's talk to Jamie.
The road got blurry when the sun came on. slept a couple hours in the pickup truck. Drank a cup of coffee by an Indian man, 1,000 miles away from that speed track.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com, and I have good news for you, Jamie. Indiana was on a bye.
That's always the best news of the weekend.
Well, you guys can get bowl eligible anyway.
Yeah, we can. I mean, you know, real quickly, they end the year with Maryland and Purdue. They're both on the road. If they sweep those, they'll go to a bowl. I mean, they'll have to sweep those rather to go to a bowl, and they can, but we'll see.
Well, Purdue looks a little bit feistier after they won against Nebraska by the score of 55-45, which is mind-blowing. Also, this game was not nearly as close as the score implies.
That's the most amazing part about it, I feel like.
At one point, it was 42-16. Mm-hmm. I mean, David Blough, they seem to have actually found a quarterback.
That's true.
Who I think is a pretty good quarterback.
Nebraska tried to find a quarterback, and then instead they found Riker Fife.
Riker Fife. Sounds like a Star Trek red shirt. And he actually played the part of a Star Trek red shirt.
He did.
As Nebraska loses to Purdue. Do you know what Mike Riley's buyout is?
No.
$8.2 million. Dollars.
Yeah, they should be looking into that for sure. You know, I mean, that's their sixth loss on the year already for Nebraska, with Michigan State and Iowa still on deck. They're looking at their first 8-loss season since they went 1-9 in 1957 when they played in the Big Seven conference. The Big Seven, guys.
I did not know that was a thing.
Before, yeah, exactly. That was actually 5 years before Bob Devaney took over as head coach. So that was obviously a very, very long time ago. And, you know, Brian, I kind of remember the introduction you wrote in the very first ever Hail to Victors. You were on a group trip, and somebody on your group asked about Rodriguez, who was after his first year, like, you know, why can't we just fire him right now? And, you know, really, if I'm a Nebraska season ticket holder, donor, or decision maker anywhere up and down the chain of command, I'm asking that today. And the answer is yes. You have to. I mean, what's worse, doing it now or waiting 2 to 3 years to do it? Because he wasn't going to be long for the job anyway, given his age, even if he was rolling out 9-win seasons like Pelini. So, I mean, you got to cut bait now. Enter the Tim Herman, Justin Fuente, and Dino Babers sweepstakes. And if you can't make any of those work, hire Scott Frost. Tell him he has a blank check. And give him a couple recruiting cycle grace periods to get them back into national contention.
That'd be nice if they hadn't priced themselves right out of that.
Yeah, I mean, like, can they really afford an $8.2 million buyout after firing Pelini? Like,
and then you still have to hire the next guy.
Yeah. I mean, do you trust this athletic director to make a choice after he went with a 62-year-old with a 500 career record at Oregon State?
After firing Pelini, who might not have been worth firing.
You know, okay.
I mean, I could see, you know, by the end of that relationship was strained.
Like, firing Pelini, I thought, was a borderline at best move. But given what we know about Bo Pelini, it's possible that there was stuff going on behind the scenes.
I'm sure there are some stories we have not heard.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like it that was like, all right.
But then you have to get somebody who's as good or better than him.
Or at least has any upside whatsoever.
Yes.
Like Mike Riley at 62 years old, you know, when did coaches fall off? About 62 years old.
And it's not like his heights were that high.
Yeah.
Well, the only upside with Riley was that his demeanor was the polar opposite of Pelini, and that apparently was something that was really important to them. But, I mean, you see this in sports all the time. When your focus of a hire is just to get a personality that's different than the last guy, those hires typically don't work. You see it all the time in pro sports when the disciplinarian gets replaced by the player's coach. You know, those are always disasters.
And we wouldn't know anything about that in Michigan.
Right.
Yeah. God.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's easier said than done. I think the one thing that you guys hit on was, you know, if you are one of those donors or decision makers, you know, how do you trust the athletic director? I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I was so dismal last fall, you know, before Brandon finally was gone, was just like, what, you know, I mean, I don't see him making the right move. So, I mean, yeah, you know, you're right. And you know, keep in mind, the last 2 years, Nebraska won this game by 79-21 score combined, and I kept thinking, you know, Bill Callahan's team once gave up 70 points to Texas Tech, and giving up 55 is about the aim. Purdue entered the game 110th nationally in yards per play gained. And the Huskers gave up 5.7 yards per play to them yesterday. Boilers outrushed Nebraska 183-77 in yards and outgained them 4.9-2.7 yards per rush. It was not pretty.
That is simply incredible. I mean, Purdue is obviously somewhat of a story here because they managed to put up 55 points against anyone other than a cardboard box. But, I mean, is Hazel maybe going to survive here? Like, can they make a bowl game at this point? I'd be shocked.
I mean, they still need four more wins.
Yeah,
it's not happening.
Their non-conference schedule really killed their bowl chances. You know, I mean, it was a pretty tough one with Marshall and Virginia Tech and Bowling Green. And I think if Hazel does survive, it's just because they've given him a pass because they stacked that non-conference schedule against him and making kind of bowl eligibility a hard path. I mean, if they close strong, win another game or two, especially that closer against Indiana, I mean, he might survive. But, you know, I do have some friends who are Purdue fans, and they're just not excited about the football program. They haven't been excited about the football program in at least 6 or 7 years. So, I mean, you know, maybe you just make a change to sort of, you know, perk people up. You know, a couple things more about this game yesterday. The Cornhuskers were -5 on turnovers, and they were all from Riker Fife. He had 4 picks, and then he had a lost fumble, although that was actually a snap over his head. And that led to 4 Purdue touchdown drives of 25 yards or less.
Riker Fife. Well, I mean, Tommy Armstrong was knocked out of this game, but at the same point, it's like, gotta have something better than walk-on from Nebraska.
Fife started.
Oh, yes. I mean, but Tommy Armstrong was injured for this game, so.
Right. Correct.
So like they
still, even with the backup quarterback, they still had an aerial-focused attack. They had 28 first downs yesterday, but only 3 came via the run. And they were playing catch-up a lot, but they were on 50-pass pace pretty much from the get-go, even though they were going with their backup quarterback. And they're second in the league right now in passing attempts, but they're on pace for 187 less rushes than a year ago.
I mean, for Nebraska, like, for one, the gods of football will strike down Nebraska whenever they stop having a running quarterback.
Right.
That's not Nebraska football. It's something else.
Yeah, and like this is actually a situation where, you know, we're kind of moving away from the zone read, the pure thing. And if you kind of focus on that, you might win that metagame a little bit. And also, like, just go get Denard if you're Nebraska, because you can get that athlete if you let him play quarterback. And have Riker Fife out there, it's just never going to work out for you. I mean, when was the last time that Nebraska tried to play pro-style football? Bill Callahan.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I don't think he's allowed back in that state still.
No.
Yeah. And Riley's a nice guy, but this is obviously Callahan 2.0 as it's playing out.
And
not only do they need to go find their Denard quarterback, they need to find some defensive players. I mean, we talk about this a lot. If not for Randy Gregory, this would be like 4 or 5 years of really bad defense. I mean, he sort of saved them for a little bit. But they need to find defensive players.
Well, any guys in their back seven.
They have a few, but they don't have enough.
Like, Collins is legit, Valentine is legit, but everybody else is just kind of like, what are you even doing? Like, even last year, Gregory, remember that game where Melvin Gordon's temporarily set the all-time single-game rushing record? That was mostly just their defensive ends being like, nah, I'm going to let Gordon outside for the 17th time. It's, I don't know, it's complete disarray. And Sean Eichhorst is the athletic director at Nebraska, and guess who he hired when he was the athletic director at Miami? Al Golden.
Well, there's a great track record.
A complete, you know, a complete Rich Rodriguez level lack of fit there, and a guy who he gave an 8-year contract, and he just seems to hire guys who he thinks are nice people. Like he's the guy who makes a decision based on like if your wife looks cool, like if like and like. Do you have good grooming habits? Like, that's what he's making his decisions based on. And, you know, when he fired Pelini and he hired Mike Riley, Nebraska fans were livid, partially because they think he's a carpetbagger and he's going to be the athletic director of Wisconsin as soon as Alvarez retires, which projects to occur 3 years after Alvarez's death. And, I mean, I don't know what you do if you're Nebraska, because you don't have any leadership and you don't
–
I mean – you can make the call to the bullpen and see if you've got a Jim Hackett, but that's pretty much what I would be doing.
Yeah, and also, I mean, in this specific season, for both Nebraska and Purdue, because we were talking about Hazel earlier, you're entering into a market where there's going to be major programs competing for – I mean the names after it gets – after the top programs get to get their pick, it's going to be bleak out there.
Yeah, I mean that's one thing that I think Kevin Wilson should keep his job. I don't care how this season ends. If you're competitive against Ohio State, if you're competitive against Michigan State, you lose that Ohio State game in part because you get your guys knocked out of the game. And even if you go 5-7 and you don't make a bowl in year five, Kevin Wilson has made Indiana into an actual program.
They're team chaos and they're interesting to watch. And given how bad they've been, they were or have been, I mean, you know, we're talking 20 years of like only one bowl game basically when he took over. You can't really establish a winning team during that first recruiting cycle. I mean, you need a significant amount of time before you start rolling out, you know, teams that, you know, win 8 or 9 games. And I agree with you. I don't think we should press the panic button in Bloomington on Wilson at all. But I think that's a different situation than Riley.
Well, I just don't know how – I mean,
they can't extricate themselves from that situation right now.
If they're going to be able to afford it and if Sean Eichhorst is going to actually make decisions based on something other than niceness. Yeah. So, sucks to be a Nebraska fan right now.
Yeah, and well, actually, unfortunately, we're going to be Nebraska fans on Saturday because they're playing Michigan State.
Well, I thought that might be competitive, but probably not.
No.
So, Iowa beats Illinois 31-15.
Maryland,
whatever. Doesn't matter.
Who cares?
Iowa's still undefeated. People are projecting them to remain undefeated until the Big Ten championship game. They don't really look like a particularly good football team, but they are winning games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, their closing stretch is at Indiana, home against Minnesota in a night game, home against Purdue, and then at Nebraska the day after Thanksgiving. And, you know, something I noticed throughout the day on Saturday was, you know, this is how much people are expecting them to just march through those four games. Every graphic I saw on Saturday that listed all the playoff contenders and the remaining big challenges, all it read for Iowa was Big Ten championship game.
Well, yeah, Iowa fans are getting to the point where they're testy because people aren't giving them enough respect and not talking about them as a playoff contender. And I'm like, well, there's a reason.
Well, I think one of the funniest things of the season was the PSA that Sal Verbal did on talking to your kids about the undefeated Iowa team. You guys seen this video?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm an Iowa fan, I get a little testy too. Like, hey, everybody's making fun of us, but for the rest of us, that's kind of funny stuff. And I mean, their best win is Pitt, who just lost to North Carolina. And what's their second? Well, they crushed Northwestern. Let me take that back. That's obviously their best win.
They did.
Yeah, but yesterday, you know, box score looked kind of shaky. They only outgained Maryland 4.3 to 4.2 in yards per play. But, you know, they kind of came out and dominated. I mean, they took the opening kickoff, got right into scoring position, and while they missed a field goal there, they scored touchdowns on 3 of their next 5 possessions. And in the first half, they had 27 plays. They ran 27 plays in Maryland territory, while the Terps just ran 1 in Iowa territory. And, you know, they, on the 19th play, Wadley scored to give them a 14-0 lead, and then on that 27th play, made it 21-0 with 8 seconds to go after a block punt set them up. And, you know, it's 240 yards, 68 at halftime, 5.6 yards per play to 2.9 at halftime. So, I mean, you know, the second half is just sort of typical, you know, Kirk Ferentz, let's just end this game. But they early TKO and they moved on.
Yep, so let's move on as well. Wisconsin 48, Rutgers 10. Yeah. I mean,
all right.
Right, that happened. Wisconsin quietly winning a lot of games. Doesn't really seem, again, like that impressive of a team, and Rutgers is Rutgers.
Yeah, Rutgers was terrible. They got dominated pretty much in every facet. They won time of possession though, so they've got that going for them. I mean, you know, Wisconsin, you know, once again, they've got great defensive numbers. You know, they're third nationally in yards allowed. They're 12th nationally in yards per play against. Their linebackers, you know, unknown as always, but obviously getting it done. They're second nationally in disruptive percentage. But it was in Alabama in that opener who smoked them. You know, they haven't really played any great offenses. And, you know, yesterday it wasn't much of a challenge for them. Rutgers had, like, one good drive the whole game. Josh Hicks powered it running the football, so he might be a player to look out for next week against Michigan. But other than that one drive, which led to a field goal, they did nothing. And it should be mentioned that their receiver, Cantor, didn't play again. That was an injury. Earlier in the year, he was out with suspension, but he was actually injured yesterday. I don't know what his long-term status is.
Well, I mean, who cares?
Yeah. Rutgers is a 3:30 kickoff next week for Michigan. That actually was one of the most disappointing pieces of news that I've heard in the last day.
Yeah, I was not pleased by that
at all.
That
is super lame. I don't want a Rutgers game to be 3:30, but what are you going to do?
It's a great slate of games this week, too.
That they the combination of the 3:30 and the great schedule next week is just like, oh, but whatever.
Penn State 39, Illinois nothing. Penn State finding some ground here, maybe? They don't seem as bad as they were when they lost to Temple, and Temple has established themselves as like a legit team. I mean, they were right in that game with Notre Dame. So maybe less pessimistic. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the wake of that Temple game, you know, I remember some people kind of tongue-in-cheek said, well, maybe good news for Penn State is Temple goes on, like a UCF 2013 run. And I mean, they kind of almost did. Excuse me. Well, I mean, they have been establishing something. I think Hackenberg was great yesterday in the second half. He was 11 for 14 for 162 yards in the four second-half drives that he had, and they extended the lead from 15 to 32 to nothing. And over his last six games, he's had four 250-yard games. He's thrown 12 touchdowns to no picks. He's had a solid 7 yards per pass. He's been sacked 18 times in this six-game stretch, so there are obviously those issues, but he's not making the NFL throws. They're kind of conservative. There's still a lot of catching and running. They're not using their tight end at all. But, I mean, he's kind of rallied and had a nice season. Hopefully it's his last in Penn State. I don't know who their backup is. But they crushed Illinois. I mean, Illinois, Allison has been catching the ball for a couple of years in the Big Ten and wants experience. But they've been getting about 45% of their production from freshmen and redshirt freshmen. And they just were overmatched yesterday against Penn State's defense from the get-go. Blunt had 3.5 yards per pass. That was terrible. I hope that's not foreshadowing for Jake Ruddick or Wilton Spate's line in a couple of weeks.
Well, I definitely could be. Just
yeah, I know.
Things. Thanks. Radio quarterback recruiting. Not ideal.
Yeah. Nope.
Crazy stuff happened around college football. Most importantly, the Miami-Duke play at the end where Miami laterals it about 8-9 times and finally breaks for a touchdown. He was down.
And there were also like three just blitheringly obvious blocks in the back on that return.
And then they reviewed it after throwing a flag for a block in the back. And then they were like, nah.
And they were also like, actually, we need more time on this review.
It was like a 9-minute review.
Duke fan, I'm beside myself.
If I'm a Duke fan, this is like literally a situation in which you can get a result overturned.
Yeah, protest the game. Absolutely.
I mean, the guy was down. It was obviously down.
What were they looking at for 9 minutes?
I don't know.
I know.
Why only idiots? Why? Twitter should be the replay official.
They get it right more often.
That play, I mean, that play took place like within 2 or 3 minutes from Michigan ending. So, I mean, it just was, the head was spinning. I had no idea what was going on with the Duke-Miami game as far as the review. Like, I turned my volume on as he was ending the play, so I was trying to figure out what in the world was going on during the review. Now, taking it a few plays earlier, Duke's apparent game-winning touchdown should not have counted. I don't think they scored on that play, if my memory serves me correct. So the whole thing was a debacle for the ACC as far as I was concerned.
It was, but what do you – I mean – Yeah.
We're in an interesting trend where we're topping the craziest endings ever each week. It's been quite a ride.
It has been, and I guess it feels good for Miami to upset Duke. What a time to be alive, Ace.
Yeah.
Maybe their basketball team will upset Duke this winter.
I have slightly lesser hopes for that eventuality. Wazoo and Stanford went down to the wire, and the crazy thing about this game is that Wazoo was going toe-to-toe with Stanford. Like, Christian McCaffrey couldn't get off on the ground. Wazoo's offense was really polished, like just one of those things where a guy drops back on first and 10 and you expect him to find an open guy for 6, 7, 8 yards. They moved the ball. They went into the Stanford red zone and scored touchdowns. It was
they outgained Stanford 442-312.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the touchdowns came late after they had like field goal to start, and then they had a reasonable shot at a field goal to win that game. They didn't. So Stanford's still in the playoff picture, but you know, I think we have to start thinking about Wazoo as a team that, even though they lost to Portland State, like maybe Mike Leach has got something going there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they were in a bowl game a couple of years ago, and then they took obviously a significant step back. I mean, it's such a grueling conference week in and week out to have to rebuild, particularly, you know, in this day and age in the Pac-12. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, things were a little bit more mediocre in the league, but it's just such a grinder, you know, in that league when you got 9 league games, you know, so you're not really ducking the teams from the other division that often. But this has been an interesting season for them, because at the start it looked like they were going to be terrible again. But they've definitely put it on. That Oregon win a couple of weeks ago was obviously huge for them to take everybody back. They won that game in several overtimes in a game that most of us didn't see. I think it was on the Pac-12 network, and it was like one of those bizarre 5:30 starts or something. You said something about how they went toe-to-toe. That's the thing with, like, even Leach's teams at Texas Tech, they were pretty, I would hate to use the word soft, because it's hard for a fan at home to gauge that. But they were a team that you could pretty much do what you wanted to on offense. And yeah, I mean, I thought Christian McCaffrey was just going to, like, steal the Heisman Trophy last night. Fournette, you know, I expected a huge performance out of him. And they limited him, obviously. And, you know, there was a review in that game. Washington State turned Stanford over, and a really one of those reviews that I think was wrong gave Stanford the ball back, and it kind of turned that game in their favor. Stanford was up 8 or 9 points at that time, and they were going to go up more if that turnover stood.
Yeah.
But somehow they found a way to review it and overturn it. I'm sorry I don't have the details. It was on so late. It's so fuzzy in my memory the next morning.
No, I remember
it. It was definitely – okay, go ahead then.
I mean, McCaffrey had the ball stripped from him, and – it was a question about whether his foot was out before that happened. It was pretty obvious that Washington State had recovered the ball, and they tried to justify it by, like, you know, McCaffrey is touching the ball when he's out of bounds. But at that point, the Washington State player had already secured it. So
yeah,
it was,
it's all coming back to me now. Yeah.
I mean, it was another one of those things where it's like, why do we have these people in the review booth who are not going to make the correct call ever, apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, the refereeing this year has been just a national disaster. Every week there's something that is just like, how did you get that wrong?
Yeah, it's the 1-2 punch of the volume of reviews with so many instances where the viewer at home is like, wait, what? That didn't get overturned, or wait, that got upheld? And I mean, so it's, yeah, it's strange. It's like, dude, you've got all this great technology. How can we keep screwing this up? I don't think the rules are that big. I know there's some big catch rules in the NFL, but I don't really think the rules are all that big. So,
well, what they need to do is they need to go to, like, the NHL model, where they just have, like, College Football Review Central, and so they can get, you know, a half dozen to a dozen people who are actually good at this.
And hopefully under the age of 40.
I'll take under the age of 80, thanks. But, I mean, that would cost money and require coordination, and, you know, maybe it'll happen, maybe not, but I would really like to see the review official become, you know, a full-time gig where you're reviewing plays from across the country, because this current system of having, I don't know, any random homeless person you come across on the way to the game in the booth is not working out.
But the ACC just suspended that officiating crew from the Duke-Miami game for 2 games, so that'll make everybody feel better, and everything's solved now.
Wow.
ACC! ACC 10!
That's crazy.
So yeah, we've
Brian Kelly's a lunatic. We haven't talked about that.
Oh, Brian Kelly, yes. Yes, go play for that guy who's currently wearing the skin of one of his grad assistants.
he's gotta control the sideline, Brian. That's what he said. He's gotta control
the sideline. I think a lot of coaches do have like their secret anger elf, and not so secret, but very few of them blow up like Brian Kelly does. And I like that for like the next 6 weeks, we're going to see like super controlled Brian Kelly, where he's just not letting his rage out.
Exactly. And then Notre Dame's going to be in a tight game, and you're just going to see all the veins in his forehead start bursting at once. It's going to be beautiful.
He'll put a rubber band around his wrist every time he wants to snap. He snaps the rubber band. That'll go on until the rubber band breaks, and that'll just be all chaos, right?
Indeed.
I mean, for him to get that rage under control, he's going to have to start like he's going to have to take a baseball bat to himself by the end of the season.
He could just try like meditating.
I mean. Maybe some counseling would be good, but it doesn't seem like Brian Kelly's too intent on fixing that whole problem.
Purple face Brian Kelly meditating, just like, oh, I'm so angry.
Clear my mind.
The door is a blue door. I don't know. Is that what meditating's like?
Sounds about right to me.
We should ask noted Frenchman George Mersian.
Well, he was losing his mind because after the first drive of that game, I mean, it just seemed like all the momentum kept building and building for Temple, like as each possession, as each quarter passed. And then all of a sudden, here they are with the lead, and you know, Notre Dame's national title hopes are about to go up in smoke, and you've got to explain it to all these hoity-toity alums who barely follow college football outside of South Bend how you blew it to Temple. You know, even though Temple's good this year, half their fan base doesn't realize that. So,
yeah, I'm very.
I thought that game was as fascinating as the Penn State game on the opening day. Remember, we all kind of were like we weren't watching, and then we all turned the volume on as sack after sack built for Temple. You know, I mean, that game. I mean, I thought Notre Dame was going to blow them out, and it all looked like they were headed that way after that first drive. But I mean, they just kept hanging in there. Yeah, I thought Temple looked really good. I thought they should have won.
They were, and then the safety just didn't get over in time. I mean. It's one of those things.
I thought he had that pick watching on TV. I mean, I thought he was going to come in there and take it. But
yeah, I mean, it's just it's been a disappointing year from the perspective of there have been a lot of games that Michigan's rivals have almost lost, but they haven't actually lost very many of them.
Michigan State, Purdue comes to mind pretty quickly.
Rutgers, yeah. Michigan State.
That also comes to mind.
Ohio State, Indiana.
Ohio State, Northern Illinois.
Michigan State, Indiana. You know,
comes to mind.
What was the game where Kaiser came in because Zaire got knocked out?
The Virginia game.
Virginia game.
With a fan over the wall.
I mean, it's
can we get some rivalry Schadenfreude in here already?
Yeah, come on, let's go. I know we used up a lot of our karma points getting Jim Harbaugh, but let's turn some of these into L's, boys.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I hear you. It's like they've all. All three of them are drinking a little bit of the late 1980s Notre Dame juice. You know, I mean, you guys probably don't remember much from back then, but I mean, they just never lost. They pulled every game out. And it seems like OSU, MSU, and Notre Dame are sort of pulling out of that. And, you know, the other thing is, I'm going to have this maybe wrong, at least from one ranking or maybe two. Maybe one of you two have the latest coaches poll. But, you know, we're talking about another crazy day of college football, but I think the 11 spots ahead of Michigan in the new coaches poll are unchanged. So, you know, kind of what you were hinting at with the rivals, you know, so close, you know, but, you know, no losses. We've flirted with that all across the board nationally. I mean, it seems like it's been a crazy year, but there really hasn't been a whole lot of poll shakeups.
No, you've got a ton of undefeated teams. It just kind of seems like everybody is scraping out the narrow ones that could have been titanic upsets, but hopefully that'll change dramatically.
It's college football. Yeah. Tends to happen.
All right, Jamie.
We have a whole month left. So yeah, I mean, I don't think we're. I mean, I would give college football a month. It'll give you some chaos back. So for sure.
All right, Jamie. We will talk to you next week.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys settle on a nickname yet for that goal line stand?
Yes, we've decided.
I think we should. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I want to hear your thing.
I was going to say we should call it the goal line stand against Minnesota.
I like it. That is catchy.
I was going to go with Rangers 310 colon space colon 310 again colon the best colon the Delta Burke story.
Also catchy.
Thank you. I'm very good at naming things.
I asked last night on Twitter when the last like walk-off goal line stand was, and I think I got every possible goal line stand Michigan's had in their program's history. I don't think people realize what walk-off means, but it was fun going through all the goal line stands to remind myself when they actually took place in the game. But Akron in 2013 and the Illinois game in 1982 were pretty much the only ones.
All right. Well, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
Yep, bye.
Thank you for listening to the MGo podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. This podcast is not brought to you by John Skipper, and therefore, it is good.